Welcome to the Sunday morning teaching from Buckeye Christian Church in Grove City. We're so glad you've joined us today and welcome you to visit in person and worship with us. Find out more about us at buckeyecc.org. Now enjoy this week's message.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be with you, second time. And all of you back there in the corner, it's nice to see you. Yeah, no, it's really good. My name is Rob Schoaf, as was already said. I'm here with my wife, Cindy. And in May, we're going to come up on 30 years of marriage. That's pretty awesome. Together, we've been in ministry for about 30 years. We have four children. They're all grown. And I know I don't look like it, but I'm a grandfather as well. So when John was asking me to come and speak, and he said I could jump in on the tail end of a sermon series that he was doing, he kind of lied to you last week when he said that last week was the last sermon in the series. It wasn't. Today will be the last sermon in the series. I'm not going to recut the strings. That was really cool when he did all of that. It was really a cool illustration, right? So I watched last week online as well, and really, really good message. And so John has been leading you through the strings, or that is all of those things that hold us back from following God more fully, more completely, following God even as much as we want to follow God, right? And so I'm going to kind of take what John had been talking about and just today wrap it all up into one thing, right? But I want to start this morning from where he has also been beginning each message, from 1 John chapter 2, verse 15 through 17. Now, some of this will be on the screen this morning, but much of what we're going to talk about will not be on the screen this morning. So if you have your Bible, together in real time, we'll go ahead and we'll search this out in our scriptures together. So let's begin, though, with 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. The scriptures say this: "Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For everything in the world, the cravings of sinful man, the lusts of his eyes, and the boasting of what he has and does, comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but the man who does the will of God lives forever." This is a kind of a hyperlink, right? How many of you use hyperlinks on a daily basis? If you're searching the internet and you're trying to find something, and if you want to find more information, you click here, and when you click, boom, it takes you to another place. We find this all over the New Testament, and the Old Testament does this with itself as well. And so whenever you kind of see, I remember John was saying that he kind of has this like fixation on eyeballs, right? So the eyeball illustration. Well, here's why, is that every time you see this idea of we chase what is right in our own eyes, or we look at what is right in our own eyes, or we see something that makes us think about what we see and what we long for and what we desire, we hyperlink all the way back to the Garden of Eden, where the first time this was being used. When Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden, they were told to eat from everything except from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, right? But when they approached the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they saw the fruit. They saw the fruit, and they saw that it was good. And so what did they do? They took it and they ate it. So in a sense, they did what was right in their own eyes, even though they knew they were not supposed to, right? We do the same thing, right? I do it every day. Me too, right? Let's get that out of the room. So everybody right now say, me too. Me too. Okay, we do it. This is where we're at. We do it because this is a part of who we are as human beings. We're constantly doing what is right in our own eyes, even if we know that it's not what we ought to be doing. Even when we know that it doesn't lead to a good result. And so much so that we do it without even thinking of the consequences. We just do it because it seems right in our own eyes. It seems like wisdom in our own minds. It feels like knowledge from our own experiences. But what we see here in John is that he says that for everything of the world, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of his eyes, the boasting of what he has and does. Everything in the world, the love of the world, is this idea of chasing our desires, searching after, following after that which we want. There's a lot of things in life that we want, right? And we do things to get it. We seek them out to have them. I call this a divine disconnect. It's not that the divine is disconnected from us, right? But it's that we disconnect from the divine. Does that make sense? right? So as we start thinking about the strings that are tying us down, that are keeping us from following and being more connected to God, know that it's not something that God is moving away from us, but it's what we are choosing to tie ourselves with, right? John's done a really good job at laying this out and providing the foundation for all of this and for this idea. Elsewhere in the Bible, this is called meaningless. Or meaninglessness, right? So don't pull it up on the screen just yet. But we're going to be looking at the book of Ecclesiastes this morning, right? This is a pretty popular book, Ecclesiastes. We do a lot of Bible study from Ecclesiastes, right? It's like Leviticus. We're there all the time. Anybody? You're allowed to laugh. It's okay, right? No, we don't spend much time in Ecclesiastes, but I love Ecclesiastes. It's on purpose, like a negative way of coming about wisdom. It's a negative way of allowing God's voice to click in our mind with what makes sense. A lot of it sounds kind of dark and sarcastic, which I kind of like because I'm fluent in sarcasm. Anyone else? But when I get tired or if I'm overworked or overstressed, my sarcasm becomes a little bit too much and you begin to really hear what Rob really thinks, right? And so that times can become hurtful and I have to come around and say, hey, I'm sorry, Cindy, I didn't mean what I said about get it yourself or whatever, right? Or did it grow legs and walk away? I don't know where your drink is or whatever, right? And so this is the idea that Ecclesiastes really puts before us, but it is a beautiful book. But even though it's beautiful, you can't take it in and of itself because it's a part of a group of books that are known as the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, right? There's three primary books within the wisdom literature of the Old Testament. One of them is Ecclesiastes. Does anybody know what the other two are? Any guesses? Proverbs is the other. Psalms, we would think, but not in this grouping. But Psalms are awesome, so keep going. What else do we think? Job. Good, very good. So there you go. Gold sticker to whoever just said Job, right? Okay, very good. So Job, Psalms, and Proverbs. We tend to have a proverbial way of attending to our faith as Christians. We tend to believe what Proverbs has to say, that if you do this, then you can expect this. Right? Like, if you live a good life and you seek after the Lord, the guarantee is that you will live long and prosper in this life. Live long and prosper, I think, is Dr. Spock. But anyway, that you will have a good life, right? That if you follow God, that life will be good. That if you dedicate yourself to God in His service, that your troubles will be less, right? This is what the Proverbs have to say. Flip over with me to Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 through 8. Perfect example. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. And if you do, He will make your paths straight. It's a pretty well-known verse, isn't it? Right? He says this. He says in verse 7, do not be wise in your own eyes. Remember, your own eyes. Don't do what is right in your own eyes. But fear the Lord and shun evil. And when you do, this will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. Sounds like a good deal, doesn't it? Right? The older I get, right, the more I want health to my body and nourishment to my bones, right? So on my 50th birthday, I remember specifically, on my 50th birthday, I threw my back out getting out of bed because of the way I swung my leg just to get out of bed. And I, you know, messed up my back and my body said, happy birthday, old guy. So this idea of do this and get this, right? That we begin to expect things to be a certain way if we're Christians, don't we? Anybody in the room? We grow up thinking this mentality, like, hey, God, like, throw me a bone here, right? I go to church, I say my prayers, I raise my kids in the church, and I still have problems in my life. Where are you? Anybody thought that before? Right? I have a lot, right? Because this is the Proverbs way of thinking. But if we think of Proverbs and Job and Ecclesiastes kind of in this pictured type of way, think of them as like three old guys sitting on a deck sharing their glasses of sweet tea, and they're talking about life, right? So you got Job is sitting over here, Proverbs is sitting here, Ecclesiastes is sitting over here, and they're waxing eloquently about life and the meaning of life. And I walk up and I say to Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job, hey guys, you've been around a lot longer than I have. You are crazy wise. What is the meaning of life? And so Proverbs looks at me and he says, well, let's look at what I said in Proverbs 13, chapter 9. And he says, the light of the righteous shines brightly, but the lamp of the wicked is snuffed out. And then he says, well, if you don't get it there, look at chapter 24 and verse 20. So Proverbs chapter 24, verse 20 says this, "For the evil man has no future hope, and the lamp of the wicked will be snuffed out." Right? So we get to see here what's happening is that Proverbs is saying, hey, look, if you are righteous, you're going to have a long life. If you are righteous, then things are going to go for you. If you're not a righteous person, then your lamp and your life is going to be snuffed out in a similar way as a candle. And Job then kind of speaks up and he goes, well, hang on. Look at Job chapter 20, verse 17, right? Job then says, hang on a minute. How often is the lamp of the wicked snuffed out? And how often does calamity come upon them? The fate of God allots in his anger. Like, when does it actually happen, right? And that's when Ecclesiastes kind of steps in. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 15 says this, right? So we'll flip over to Ecclesiastes 7. And this is what he has to say. Ecclesiastes says, well, look, in this meaningless life of mine, I've seen both of these things take place. I've seen a righteous man perishing in his righteousness and a wicked man living long in his wickedness, right? So which is it? You know, seek God and prosper until you don't, or it's all a crapshoot, right? We got to take all three of them together. Right, and I do think it's what we're going to find is that this isn't meaningless. That the teacher that's speaking in Ecclesiastes is saying more than 40 times, meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. This is meaningless. That is meaningless. You are meaningless. I am meaningless. All of this is meaningless. In 12 chapters, more than 40 times, we find this word. But what Ecclesiastes is trying to do is reframe a false bill of goods that we've been sold. And that false bill of goods is this. If you do the God thing, you're going to have an amazing life, right? How many of you are kind of chuckling to yourself? If you follow God, if you follow Christ fully, right? In the way that Pastor John's been talking about, right? What are the things that keep us from following God more fully, right? What keeps us from doing that? Because if we would only just follow God fully, then our life is going to be amazing, right? No, right? It's not promise. It's not a guarantee. You see, the book of Proverbs are proverbs. They're not promises. And I think that when we come to books like Proverbs, we begin to read them as promises. And this carries over into our life as Christians, that we begin to think, well, if I come to the Lord and I'm baptized and I take communion every Sunday and I give my money to the church and I do good things and I even volunteer in the junior high ministry, right? If I do these things, then of course I'm going to go to heaven, right? But this life on earth is also going to be so much better. If I just follow God and I put all my faith and trust in Him, things are going to be easy. I'm going to have a carefree life, right? Is that working out for anybody in the room? It's not working for me because I don't think it's supposed to. You see, the writer, or rather the author and the teacher in Ecclesiastes kind of does this. I think that at the end, we find ourselves maybe, you know, in a slobbery pool in the fetal position over in the corner, crying out to God for help, right? Putting our dependence in God and in who He is and what He's done through Christ so that we can be who we are, right? Because oftentimes, this is the good news. The good news usually comes to people who are trying to seek out every other thing, but we seek out every other thing to no avail. There's no end to our seeking out what we want. There's no end to trying to fill our desires. There's no end to more. What I think the Bible is telling us is that happiness, though is a good thing, is very overrated, right? You see, good news comes to those of us that are searching. But good news also comes to those of us that are content in our, well, at least we think we're content. We may say we're content, but if we really dig in, we're actually still searching. We spend most of our lives chasing after the wind. We spend most of our lives situated, hours of our lives spent on things that really aren't eternal. They have meaning, and they're good things, But there are those things that John has been telling us have been holding us down. They've been tying us back, keeping us from following God in the ways that we really think we want to be following God. You see, we chase after various levels of happiness, and we're never really truly happy because then we realize how tied down we actually are. Flip over into Ecclesiastes chapter 1, if you will, because I want to look at this word in the first two verses. We find that Ecclesiastes, as I said, is really written by, who wrote Ecclesiastes? Anybody? Oh, I heard. Who'd you say? Solomon, right? Does the Bible say that? Now, we think that Solomon wrote it. Maybe Solomon wrote it. But what we find is that there is an anonymous author that's then telling the story of the teacher, right? So in the very first verse, it says, the author says, the words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. And then for the next almost 12 full chapters, we hear the teacher giving all of his wisdom, all of his ideas, all of his knowledge. And in the very end, the author breaks back in, and we'll get there. But in verse 2, this is what the teacher says. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Now, I'm reading from the NIV. Does your Bible say a different word instead of meaningless? Anybody? Yeah, what'd you say? Says what? Futile. Okay, futile. That's a good word. I like that, right? Futile. Does anybody say vanity? Right? Okay, yours says vanity. So we see this like futile, vanity, meaningless. And it kind of, they all kind of are good translations of the original Hebrew word. The original Hebrew word is hevel, right? Repeat after me, hevel. Okay, one more time, hevel. You guys all speak Hebrew. Yeah, way to go. So hevel is the word, and hevel doesn't really mean meaningless, because when we look at the word meaningless, we think of something that doesn't have worth, something that has no value, right? And so what the teacher isn't saying, that everything is worthless, nothing has value, right? So meaningless really isn't the best translation. If we start looking at the word vanity, right? In our modern understanding of vanity, we think of vanity as something that we sit down, well, ladies sit down to put on their makeup, right? At the vanity. You sit at the vanity. Anybody still do that, by the way? Right? Maybe not. Maybe it's something that my grandmother did. I don't know. But vanity. Another way that we look at the word vanity is kind of egotistical or prideful, right? We think that everything is all about us. And I don't think that that's what the teacher is saying here either, that like, you know, hey, egotistical, prideful, everything in life is prideful. It's all about you, right? I don't think he's saying that. Now, futility is like you're working to no end, right? I like that word, futile, because the word hevel actually means smoke or vapor or fog, right? This is really the idea of the word hevel. Is even though it's a thing, you can see it, it's there, you can't ever really grasp it. And so trying to grasp it is futile, right? You never can actually do it. You're chasing the wind, right? Have you ever tried to chase the wind? You'll never catch it, right? The wind you can't see. If you chase smoke, you still can't catch it, even if you catch up to it, because you can't grasp it. And so when the teacher is saying that everything is like smoke, we run after these things, but we can never really grab it. Chapter 2, he goes on and he says, pleasures are meaningless. I'm going to read a section of this. And he says, I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be hevel. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with my own wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men, not meaningless, but worth something. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. When we say under heaven or under the sun, it's here on earth, right? It's this life. Like, what is life about? He was chasing the meaning of life. He said, here's how I did. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves and flourishing trees. I bought male and female servants. I owned herds and flocks more than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. He had a really good 401k, right? That's what he's saying. I acquired men and women singers and a harem as well. More wives than you could count. The delights of my heart Right? The delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. My wisdom, my understanding. I denied myself nothing. My eyes desired. Whatever I saw, just like Eve in the garden, I took and I ate. Right? He said, I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work. Everything I did, all my accomplishments, I became proud of that. I saw everything that I had done. And this was the reward for my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was hevel, a chasing after the wind. You see, we get all the way to chapter 9 and the writer of Ecclesiastes says that we're all going to die. And then what? Right? Congratulations. What'd you learn in church today? Oh, it was so uplifting, right? It was so great. Like, this isn't it. Like, what the point of all of this is that we're supposed to be looking at our lives and what we're doing and understanding that life is hard, even under the best circumstances. And it's especially hard if we believe that God's job is to make me happy, right? Like the Proverbs say. We're going to end up with unmet expectations, and it's not the end. Flip over to chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes, please. We'll start to wrap up with this, is that in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, the author steps back in. After all of this time that the teacher has been teaching, the author steps back in verse 9 of chapter 12. And he says this, not only was the teacher wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs, which he did if you read all of Ecclesiastes. But by setting them in order is giving kind of this like reality, right? Like search the Lord with all your heart and when you're old, you'll be great until you're not, right? Is what Ecclesiastes is doing. He says that the teacher searched to find just the right words and what he wrote was upright and true. And it really was, right? That if all of this is all there is, then it's hevel, right? If this is all there is, then it's smoke. We'll never grasp it. We'll never achieve it. And so therefore, like the author says, all there is for man to do, our responsibility is to put God in a position of awe and follow his commands. Do what he says. You see, that's all that matters. Our decisions do matter, right? The things that we do, like we all are created to love and to be loved, but not at the expense of loving in a manner that is contrary to what God has created for us. We all want to have a spouse, and I said with my wife, but if I put my wife Cindy on a pedestal that my whole life revolves around her, well, that would be great for a while. But what happens if something happens to her? Or what happens if her expectations of what I'm doing is being let down? Like I'm putting my whole life in a hurry. What about our kids? This morning, we were at the hotel and there were, I don't know, 842,000 soccer players that were there at the hotel. And they were, I mean, I'm not kidding you, they were running across the tables and standing on the chairs in their cleats. And I looked around and I thought, where are your parents, right? But it's like we have these parents that are dedicating their lives, their Sundays, to taking their kids to play soccer. They have more money on their feet than I do in that truck I was talking about, right? They've got these jerseys that the parents are buying that they look like they could play for Real Madrid, right? I mean, it's like the uniforms are just pristine. And they're traveling all over, I guess, the state of Ohio, maybe, to participate in this U-12 league, which is under 12. So we have all of this happening, the finances, the time, the experiences for children that are under 12 years old, that maybe or maybe not they'll be the next Leo Messi. Probably not. But we do this, that we put our entire life into our kids. But then what happens when our kids grow up and move away and have their family and make their own decisions and don't call nearly as much as our mothers wished we called them? You see, we put all of our eggs in these earthly baskets. Our jobs, we spend so much time like doing good in our job and making money in our job and being promoted and representing the job that we do. And we spend hours and hours. First it's 40, then it's 50, then it's 60, and before long it's 70. And we're spending so much time in the office that we forget our first congregations back home, our families, right? The things that are really important. I've never met anybody on their deathbed that ever said, man, I wish I spent more time at work. Never, not once. But it doesn't mean that there's no meaning, right? This is not all that matters. We might not ever be able to see what God has planned for us. We may never get the answers to why we have problems in our lives. We may never grasp what doesn't make sense. But it doesn't mean that there's no meaning. I think it's important to separate ourselves from vending machine thinking, that we throw our prayers in and then we push the button and we expect the sugary soda to pop out of the bottom, right? That's not how God works. It's important because this is the opposite of the gospel. And the gospel is this, that it's God's story from the very beginning, working with a group of people that kind of mess things up. And God has chosen to work with Abraham's family to bring about this redemption and this creation of this beautiful thing that He created, including our own humanity. And all of this redemption story has its climax in the appearing and in the person of Jesus Christ, who comes to not only redeem us as people, but to redeem all creation. John tells us in John 3:16, "For God so loved the cosmos," the creation, "that He sent His one and only Son." So it's not just us, it's everything that we see and everything that we've kind of messed up. And it has this climax in Jesus, this redemption and on the cross and the shedding of His blood, and then the resurrection to life, that we have a risen Savior. And as He is alive, so we also in Him live forever. That's God's deal. But then we have our deal that says it's really about me inviting God into my life. And that God is here to work everything out for the good of those who love Him. And I love Him, so He's going to work everything out for the good. And if He doesn't, I guess I'll take it into my own hands and I'll work out my own good. I'll lead to my own salvation. I'll lead to my own way. I'll take God's deal. The Apostle Paul said it this way, and I'll close here with Philippians chapter 4. And in Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13, he says this. He says, "I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, because I can do all things through Him who gives me the strength to do them." You see, this may seem impossible because this is how life is. It's hard, even on the best of days. But I think sometimes we make it harder for ourselves. This is the gospel. There's no guarantees in life other than God's sovereignty, right? We kind of have a joke that the only guarantees in life are, you know, birth, death, and taxes, right? It's the only guarantee in life. Maybe the Buckeyes, right? I don't know. We'll see. But there, the author in Ecclesiastes 12 says this, "Continue to be in awe of who God is and follow His instructions." That's what's going to cut the strings. That's what's going to set us free, and that's what's going to allow us to follow Him the way that we really want to follow Him.
We trust you've been challenged and encouraged by today's message from lead minister John Thomason at Buckeye Christian Church in Grove City. For service times, to hear today's message again, or for other questions you might have, we invite you to visit our website at buckeyecc.org. We look forward to meeting you soon.